ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्याज्ञनञ्जनाशलाकया साक्षिन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठम् मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रम् अत्रा स्वरूपम् रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोस्तावतीं राधाकुन्दं गिरिवरमहो राधिकमाधावसम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतिद्धकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमौलिरत्नमालदिते निराजितापदपङ्कजन्त भाजीमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्त्वं हरिणां संश्रयामि। अनार्पितचरिं चिरात्करुणयावतीर्णाकलो समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरता सुन्दरा द्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये पुण्डरेश्पुरतो वासचिनन्दनः अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकापदातो सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलायतक्षो विश्वम्बरो धियावरो जुगधर्मपालो जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो लाधिनी शक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गाश्रिदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमोऽस्तु ते। हे कृष्ण करुणसिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिकान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते। राधे वृन्दावनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनी कृपया निजपादब्जा दास्यान्मयं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधक्षये क्षिप्तश्चागमादितरङ्गमाधे कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपन्नम् वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दम् वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दम्। श्री सचिनंदन गौड़ हरि की जय। श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय। वेद भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमांग हरि। Morning to all of you. Welcome. And we have a few more days together. This coming weekend, today, tomorrow, will be the Monday, bringing to a close our second UK retreat, quote unquote, close, ever evolving close. And today we are returning to some of the morning explorations and some of the main themes of evolution and divine love after having had a day and a half of grief exploration, and also as an extension of the themes presented, evolution and divine love. So we have talked about, again, love, about the divine. We have talked about us, the soul's ever-evolving, ever-devolving potential. This brief exploration was a lot about us in a healthy way, hopefully. So we have stayed some time with us. No? We need some time for us and to understand who we are and what's going on in our inner landscape. So today I felt, as a continuation, hopefully, as a way of honoring the previous days we have gone through brief exploration and healing. And I trust each one of us, but from what I've heard, have also not only a glimpse of gaining a clearer picture of what's grief and how grief inhabits my inner landscape and how that could be addressed and named and framed and expressed, but also I've witnessed in the context of that the experience of unconditional love, also the experience of acceptance, the experience of belonging, the experience of returning to the village, right? Or realizing that you always belong to the village, but somehow you thought you were exiled from existence. So today I'd like to touch upon the topic of unconditional love, which again we have talked about during these last days. We have had hopefully tangible experience of what it means to be genuinely embraced and accepted and supported in our grief, in our messiness, in our everything. And I think it's a topic worthy of further exploration and pounding of the post. And tomorrow we'll have a last session on evolution and divine love, touching upon the last chapter of the book, which is about nature, material energy, and the sacredness of the nature kingdom, as Manjuali loves to put it. Thank you for that one. So again, we have done some descent work these last days in terms of grief exploration. Not only the journey is not only about ascending, transcending, but a lot about descending and getting proper rootedness and groundedness. So the whole ascending, transcending project is well founded, basically, right? Because if not, it's not possible. Well founded and well funded. Right. If there's not funding, you cannot do the project. If it's not founding, there you cannot do the project. So we need proper acquaintance with the root that needs to be there. Again, that this means to be radical in every way, going to the roots of things, knowing that acknowledging the roots preserves the upward growth of the project. So today I like to, yeah, to refer to my book. I'd like to share a few sections also from my upcoming book, because that will be all about unconditional love. It's already written, as I think I told you. It was very, very strange experience for me, because when I was publishing my third book, I just finished writing my fourth book. So I was really into my fourth book, but now I'm supposed to travel around the world and present my third book. This was a little bit like an inner disjointment of sorts. But of course, fortunately, the topics of the books are always connected and intertwined. So it's not like one book has nothing to do with the other. So there was enough in common for me not to feel entirely out of place. It was still a particular experience. And I've learned my lesson. Probably I won't be doing the same for future books. I'll try to, okay, one, next one. But yeah, the next one is planned to be all about the principle of unconditional love, as I like to put it, irreversible grace. We are accustomed to speak about irreversible damage, right? Why not to speak about irreversible grace? Something that is given, and once it's given, it cannot be taken away. But we just need to become aware of that and what gets in the way of that awareness. So I'll be referring to evolution and divine love. I may be referring to some quotes and sections from the next book. I may be referring to some poems. Why not?
Yeah.
Last night we have our dose, and I dare to say overdose. Never, never. Yes. We were drenched into the wine of divine love in the tavern last night. Yeah. We had a good
Good session.
drunk session.
Good
Yeah,
session.
yeah, yeah. Good session. So again, I personally, again, yeah, connecting to yesterday and the day before yesterday, the grief exploration, because I like to keep everything as connected as possible, because reality is interconnected. So we want to honor that principle by whatever we do and share and say shows the interconnectedness of everything. So again, I hope that these days of the grief exploration, we all had a glimpse of what it means to belong, not only what it means to grieve, but also what it means to belong. In the context of grieving and in the context of everything, no? Real belonging has to allow everything on the table. All the weathers of the heart are welcome, so, as I mentioned, radical personalism. So hopefully we gain a glimpse of how we need to grieve on a individual level, ancestral level, universal level. There are so many things to cry for in a healthy way, in the context of love, again, as an expression of expanded consciousness, more sensitivity. But also, again, hopefully, we gain an awareness of the nature of unconditional love and what it means to be part, accepted, not apart, not fitting in, but belonging, fully accepted as we are, for who we are, as we are, and for all that we can be. But all that, including our moments of grieving, our moments of vulnerability, our moments of exposure, fragility. When we can experience that we belong in those moments, that can really give us a very powerful epiphany that, oh, okay, real belonging is, I mean, it's true. No, it's not a fake story to make life bearable, not to cope with things. So yeah, we'll try to explore this topic of unconditional love today a little bit. In connection to us, again, somehow we have talked about God, divine love, and us. And now, in talking about unconditional love, we'll bring the divine into the picture, ourselves, divine love itself, and how all this intertwine. So, I'll read one poem to begin with from this book, one that I read yesterday, but some of you were not present, and some of you were too drunk to remember. So I'll go again. It was one of the first ones, so probably you are not that tipsy-turvy, but even if you know it by heart, we can read it again over and over again, right? Because knowing it by heart, not by head, interesting expression in English. If you know something by heart, it's not just memorization, but by heart, and in the heart level, everything is always evolving. So knowing something by heart is renewing and updating everything. We are invited to know reality by heart. And to know everything by heart, right? How we translated that as memorizing stuff, I don't know. So just please stick with the literal reading of this one by heart. So this is a poem by Saint Thomas of Aquinas, Saint Thomas Aquinas, actually. I read it yesterday, called "Could You Embrace That?"
Yes.
Okay, those were not that drunk, the ones. And we'll connect that with the topic of today. Thomas says, "I say to God, let me love you." And he replied, "Which part?" All of you," I said. Remember, this is a rendition by Daniel Ledinsky. He will add his own spice to the masala. And you may realize which parts those are. They're beautiful. "So I say to God, let me love you." And he replied, "Which part?" All of you," I said. "Dear," God spoke, "you are as a mouse wanting to impregnate the tiger who is not even in heat. It is a feat way beyond your courage and strength. You will run from me if I remove my mask. I may be too much for you." I say to God again, "Beloved, I need to love you, every aspect, every pore." And this time, God said, "There is a hideous blemish on my body, though it is such an infinitesimal part of my being. Could you kiss that if it were revealed? I will try, Lord, I will try. And then God said, that blemishes all the hatred and cruelty in this world. And the title was, Could You Embrace That? That's a call of unconditional love. That's how we are being loved. And that's how we are invited to love. How we are being invited to love. So we were talking a few days ago, you may recall this, we were saying that the goal of life, because when we ask, oh, what's the goal of life? And we will say, to develop pure love for God. That's the official one-liner. And it's fine, it's correct, but which are the implications of that? To fall in love is the goal of life. To fall in love with God, yeah, to fall in love with one person, to fall in love with my wife and my dog, to fall in love in an absolute way, with the totality of reality. That's your potential in love. It's not that, Umar, you're asking too much from me. No, I'm trying to remind you how much you can love and how much I can love. I need to remind, by reminding you, I'm reminding myself, because we are constantly underestimating our potential. So the goal of life is not merely to fall in love, but to fall in love in an absolute way with the totality of reality. Okay, since you are writing your new definition of when someone asks you what's the goal of life, you already have a more challenging one. Goal of life is to fall in love in an absolute way with the totality of reality forever, in an ever-evolving way. And why that's the goal, quote unquote. And as we know, the goal is ever evolving, right? There's no end rooftop to that. But that's like that because that's the type of love we are receiving from the sweet absolute. The divine has fallen in love from time without beginning in an absolute way with the totality of reality, which includes us and everything and everyone. So if I'm being loved in an absolute way, in a total way, me and everything, I'm invited to
Love in the same way.
love in the same way. Not only to the person that is loving me in that way, but to the people that are being loved in that same way, but that person I'm trying to love in the same way. Right? Because again, reality is relational. Nothing exists separated from each other. So if I'm loving something, I'm loving everything else, ideally. If harming something, I'm extending harm in other direction. So that's the only currency in the ultimate market. Let's put it that way, right? Unconditional love. God is falling in love in an absolute way with the totality of reality. We are recipients of that. Everyone is a recipient of that. Whether they are aware or not, that's another story. But everything is a recipient of God's falling in love. And therefore, the only question, as we always say, when you realize that, the only question is, how can I serve? How can I love back? How can I return the embrace? Whatever, however you may want to frame it. At one point, you realize that's the only currency available in the market. In true reality, the only currency in the market is love and unconditional love and a falling in love in an absolute way, not a partial love. That will be a counterfeit currency, that gets slips in the market, the clandestine market. They're to live a clandestine life in the dark. But the only currency in the ultimate market, in actual reality, the only currency in the market is love. The only language there. Sometimes people ask, oh, which language do they speak in Vrindavan? Sanskrit, Brijbasi, Brijbas. They speak love. That's a language. It may take the form Nityanaudi, Bengali, maybe it may take the form of any of those languages or whatever you want, but the actual language is love. It's important to stay there. So I briefly mentioned, though again, evolution in divine love is not officially a treatise on the unconditionality of love, a detailed study of that. I kind of mentioned something about it. So I like to share that with you. And somehow this sets the tone for the next group. I was not thinking about it, but that's how it happens. So I like to begin with a quote from Rupa Goswami, and I will be sharing some quotes throughout today about how our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition speaks about unconditional love, speaks about how we are being loved by Krishna. And I will pro though I started quoting Thomas Aquinas, I will mostly share from our tradition, because most of us have religious PTSD in terms of probably never having never heard this good news coming from our tradition. So we may have acquired some unresolved trauma with the idea God doesn't love you, you have to earn it, to deserve it, he's easily angry, you will be chastised, the whole thing becomes utterly transactional, reward punish system, blah blah blah. So in order to hopefully heal and counteract that narrative, I like to share, and that's the attempt of the whole book that I'll be writing, mostly from our tradition, but from other traditions as well. So this being said everywhere, including our tradition, a lot. So this is what you belong to, actually. This is the real Gaudiya Vaishnavism we belong to. So I like to start with the definition that Rupa Goswami gives. It's in page 31. At the very, very end of the page, there is a definition of Rupa Goswami about unconditional love. One of the many. There's not only one. It's from Ujjwala Nilamani. This is in the context of the section on Sri Radha. So he says, true spontaneous love neither diminishes upon seeing developed faults, nor increases upon seeing their virtues. Such love is independent and persists under all circumstances. He never used the word unconditional, but it's all about that. Right? So he's saying when the lover sees the faults of the beloved, their love does not diminish. Where the lover sees the virtues of the beloved, their love is not augmenting because of the virtues. Because if not, that will be conditional. When you are faulty, I love you less. When you are talented, I love you more. So it's depending on something else. So unconditional means unconditional. No, it doesn't matter if you don't need to hide your messiness. So I love you, and you don't need to impress me with your coolness. So I love you. Because no? Generally, those are the two things we try to do in relationships. So someone loves us. No, 300 masks so they don't see the messiness, and 300 layers of makeup to impress and to show, and this like that makeup in not literally physically, but just adding color and trying to impress and look. And unconditional love doesn't care for either of those. It's a kind of like disarming. Yeah. Like you don't care for any, so it doesn't make sense. Right? Because if we have that narrative very ingrained, it's like that's the only way love works, right? That's the love I learned again at home or in childhood. That's how you earn it, that's how you don't earn it, that's how I develop my whole persona and character, and then unconditional love comes and dissolves, dismantles that whole structure and says, you're already being loved. What? So it invites us to recalibrate the whole series of questions that we make on a daily basis in trying to relate to others, from which place I'm relating to others, to God, to myself. Anyhow, I'll read the paragraph from the next page about that. That's what I want to hear. Page 32. And again, this is in the context of the section about Sri Radha, so she's mentioned once. This verse speaks not only of Radha's love, it does, of course, but also how genuine love intrinsically grows, regardless of the qualities of or shortcomings of the beloved. This is on the concept of ever-evolving love and love always increasing. Despite challenges or obstacles, this love can only increase. It is unconditional. So real love can only increase. And not because of anything, because that's the nature of love, that's it. While the notion of unconditional love often suggests receiving something beyond deserving, which is true also, it is vital to recognize that unconditional love also points to a love that is free from all conditions and limitations, expanding without end. That means it's unconditional. No matter the condition, it can only grow. Conditional love cannot embody true love, which by nature must be free from constraints. An essential attribute of love is its perpetual growth and renewal, making it unconditionally constant in its freshness. Since God's love is wholly unconditional, our response to the divine should mirror that, an unconditional offering of love in return. So that's a section of the book where I'm touching upon unconditional love in the context of its ever-evolvingness. No, maybe not so much in terms of receiving a gift that we then nothing to deserve and so on and so forth, which is also true. And I will explore in that in the next book about it. But that's the nature of love again. As Rupa Goswami says, no matter virtues, faults, unconditional love doesn't care for any of that. We care about all that stuff. Love cares about loving. That's the only question love has in its mind, so to say. How to love more? How to love now? How to love here? Oh, but here's this ultra messy person. How to love that ultra messy stuff? That's the only concern of love, right? Or of those who love. How to honor the lovability of this particular situation and person? Because I know it's possible. Love has that intrinsic trust and hope. No matter how messy, how broken, how anything, or how brilliant, how high, it's possible to love. No, it's always possible. And sometimes, in order for love to love, it needs to be upgraded to a new level of loving and accommodating and expanding and growing in depth. And that's the daily invitation, especially when we find difficult to love something, someone, a particular thing, situation, person. Actually, that's an invitation of, that's indirectly love's clarion call knocking, and may you grow in love. May you get a further glimpse of what love really looks like, always willing to love more. Again, I'm talking about ever-evolving love in this book, and by its ever-evolving nature, unconditional love becomes every time more unconditional. Right? To say unconditional love doesn't mean there's a limit to its unconditionality. Right? Like when we talked that, they were talking about something like forgiveness. Forgiveness, to give an example of how the things are eternal. It's not like forgiveness is, okay, you did something to me, I forgive you. Maybe, but you can forgive that person in so many levels. It's not that I did not forgive you and now I forgive you. It's end of the story of the forgiveness story. Let's move forward. No, you can continue to forgive yourself, others, endlessly. Because forgiveness is ideally an expression of love. So you can love endlessly, you can forgive endlessly. In the same way, part of love's unconditionality is forgiveness, if you want to put it that way. And it's no end. Unconditional love becomes every time more unconditional. And of course, going back for a moment to grief exploration, and I'm not entering into any details because I'm recording this and this will be shared publicly, but as a general thing, we explored how many times many of us realized that we many of the things we needed to grieve for, and again, this is not about our group, it's about every single human being. Many of the things we needed to grieve for were in connection to not receiving the unconditional love we naturally expected. I will say, if we have to summarize and reduce the main cause of grief for most people, maybe that's one of the main ones, right? I expect, especially as a child, as a baby, in my fragility, in my vulnerability, in my naivete, naturally expecting unconditional love intuitively and not having those needs met. So, and all that comes from that then, now the performing, the trauma, the lacking, the developing a personality to fit in, blah, blah, blah. But it all began probably with not receiving that, as I quoted the other day, and I'm quoting that in my next book, Harry Now, and saying, what is your pain? It is the experience of not receiving what you most need. Very simple, but very, at least for me, very hitting the mark in this case. What is your pain? It is the experience of not receiving what you most need. And again, ultimately, what we most need is unconditional love, unconditional regard and acceptance. So when that need is not met, naturally pain comes in so many forms. And I remember at one point we were saying, okay, but as children, we were just wanting something very simple. We were just wanting unconditional love. And it's something very simple. It should be the most natural thing. But the problem is if our, let's say, as children, our caretakers, our parents, our authority figures, they themselves did not receive that. It's not in their toolkit. It's not at their disposal. It's nothing personal. It's just they haven't learned to speak that language. So they cannot teach you Japanese if they haven't learned Japanese first, so to say, right? Right. So it's interesting, as I remember I mentioned, of course, it's the natural tendency to expect that because our source, father and mother, the divine male, female, Sri Radha and Krishna, they love us unconditionally. We may not know that as a 3-year-old baby, Radha and Krishna love me unconditionally. We may have no clue who is Radha and Krishna. But intuitively, you expect the representatives of the divine father and mother, which are our biological mom and dad, to somehow embody the unconditional love that the original mother and father have for everyone. And when that's not happening, okay, we know what happens when that's not happening. So again, we may not have received, in some degree or another, it's not a black and white story again, the unconditional love we needed. And of course, when that's the case, then we fail ourselves to express unconditional love to others. But fail in the sense of, I failed in the sense because I don't have it. I don't know what's that. I'm not aware of that. So, because of a lack of unconditional love, I don't know how to extend unconditional love to others. And then many times comes shame into the picture. And here I can just talk briefly, touch upon that. As we had brief exploration, we need a shame exploration date. And it's all intertwined, of course, right? So there's so much to say in this regard. But many times we experience shame first because of not having received unconditional love. Many times we end up taking it on ourselves. Like, oh, I was not loved by because I was wrong. Because there's something intrinsically wrong in my core, and that's why mom and dad did not pay attention to me. Whatever, just to give a general example. So sometimes we take it on ourselves, well, because I'm worthless. I'm unlovable. So that's why I did not receive what I expected. And maybe then also another way of whipping ourselves is realizing I'm not extending love to others. I'm failing at loving. Right? But not connecting why I'm failing at loving is we start to feel shame because of, and we think, well, I am unloving. Right? I'm not loving others. I'm unloving. So you have these two strands of shame that can come from us just not having received that to begin with in the first place. I'm not lovable, I'm unlovable, I'm unworthy, that's why it's not coming to me, or I'm unloving, I'm failing in extending that to others. And then you can inaugurate a festival of misery, as a friend will put it, that has no end. Basically, so we need to know how to stop that vicious circle, that snowball effect, because then you perpetrate that, extend that, give that inheritance, quote unquote, in parampara to the next generation and to the next generation. As we were talking the other day, we have wars, but those wars come from unprocessed stuff from previous wars and previous, and the wars come from the war that we are having with ourselves inside of ourselves individually. So in order to heal all that deeper and deeper, at least today, I'm not, again, we are not in a few, in an hour solving the whole puzzle, so to say. But we're trying to explore a little bit to begin with how, even if hypothetically put in that way, even if everyone in our lives till today, which is not the case, because I trust at least here it's not the case, but for a good part of our life, most people failed in expressing unconditional love to us. And we may have similarly failed to extend that to others. If that happened for some time and we kind of became convinced there's no unconditional love, there's no such a thing, and that stuff, and we start to live life in a very, how to say, fatalistic, cynical, negative-oriented way, even our spiritual life. Maybe entering in touch with God's unconditional love can start to heal that. And by even, I say, entering in touch, even starting to speak about it, to start to hear words from God about how God loves us, even starting to expose our ears to the notion of, oh, you are loved, even if it's a sentence, trying to gradually can make us. Can transform us not only as receivers, but again as extenders of the same gift. We were talking the other day about naming and framing something, right? Articulating, putting something in words. So even just to hear you are loved, oh wow, I never heard that sentence in my life before. So exposing yourself to the sound creates form, as we were saying. Now the naming creates the framing. Bringing what's in the unconscious, bringing to the conscious, and starts to build a more concrete, tangible sense of experience that there is something called unconditional love. I'm an object of that, and everyone else is an object of that. So I can be also an instrument of that, not only an object of that, and so on. But before diving deeper, exercise number one. They will have two exercises and one homework. We will become very nerdy today. So I'll let you know what's the exercise about, and then we'll continue exploring. So first of all, prompt. First, it will be an individual part. We will be writing something, and then we'll be sharing in groups. So first, I'll give you two prompts, 3 minutes each, and I will be marking with the ball. You will be very nice boys and girls, and whenever I hit the ball, you will turn to the next phase of the exercise, please.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. As beautiful and submissive as you were with Bhakti Rasa's ball, please surrender to me in that situation. I'm not someone who likes to demand surrender, but in this context, please, please. So, so I'll be playing the ball, right? So first prompt number one, 3 minutes writing, each one by yourself. Write about a moment in your life when unconditional love was absent. And here comes two options for that. Either you could not give it or you could not receive it. You have to pick one of the two. It's clear? Prompt number one, 3 minutes. Write about a moment when unconditional love was absent in your life. And there are two options. You have to pick one of those, whether you did not receive it or you failed to give it or express it to others. One of the two. And then prompt number two is write for 3 minutes also. A moment when unconditional love was present. And again, the two options are present in the form of you receiving it or you giving it. And for this second prompt, take the opposite role from prompt one. So if you were the giver in the one, you are the receiver in the second, or vice versa. It's clear? So in prompt number one, you speak about I didn't receive love. In prompt two, you can write about I was when you were able to give love. Yeah? Or the other way around.
Prompt number two's two options again.
The same as the other one, but when unconditional love was possible. Now, write about the moment when you were able to receive unconditional love, or write about the moment where you were able to give unconditional love.
So this the same, didn't receive.
One is about unconditional love is not possible, not present, and the second one is it's present. And in one, you write about being giver or receiver, and in the second one, you write about the other one.
Switch it.
Yeah?
You switch it up.
As before starting, 1 minute, because that's the first part, right? So I will play 3 minutes, you write, I play again 3 minutes, and then we'll make groups of three, and you will be basically sharing. Well, I will let you know the details after the writing, because there are a few details that maybe too much to tell, let you know about that one. I will mention it now since I'm recording, in case someone wants to do it in their home, but I will remind you when we return. So then we'll make groups of three, and we will take turns. Each one will be sharing what they wrote about. And when the if this when the when one is describing a story of unconditional love flowing, after one finishes their part, the other two will say, that is lovable. And when you are describing a moment in your life where you were not able to receive unconditional love, or you were not able to give unconditional love, the two others will reflect back saying, that is human. Right? Okay. I will remind you about that once we return from the writing. So 3 minutes writing one, I will play the bowl. 3 minutes writing the other, I will play the bowl. So thank you. Welcome back. And I hope it was an interesting exchange. And again, that you can recall whatever you've heard and shared and received from others. This kind of, okay, that is lovable. That is human. That is lovable. That is to replace the voices that always say the opposite many times. That's unlovable, unworthy. That's inhuman. That's monstrous. That's bad. That's evil. No, that's human. That's lovable. Again, as I mentioned before, the importance of naming and framing. Just pronouncing these words can be very, very, very concrete for not only for to help us, as we say the other day, to name grief. So when grief is named and frame is concrete and I can release it in a concrete way, but also when I name and frame unconditional love, I can internalize, integrate that in a more concrete way. So as I said, in connection to this, trying to further pound the post, I'd like to share with you a few quotes, especially from our tradition, in relation to some of our teachers and our scriptures. I already shared something from Rupa Goswami. For us to create this pounding of the post internally and feeling reassured and affirmed by the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. And again, all other sister mystical traditions are also agreeing on this important point that we are being unconditionally loved. But since we may be carrying some form of religious PTSD, thinking that our tradition does not speak about that because we misrepresented whatever experience we may have had. Let's try to go to some of these sections. So many of them are, again, sections that I'm quoting in the next book in connection to Bhagavan's Irreversible Grace. Let's begin with one, and I've shared some of this in other lectures, but it's never enough to hear them, especially we have heard the opposite many times. We may need to hear the real actual version of these things many times as well. So I'd like to share with you a few words from Srila Siddhar Maharaj's lotus mouth in this connection. So he says like this, and hopefully you will believe him. He's not lying to us. He's not flattering. He's not exaggerating. This is as much of an accurate description as how reality actually is, and who the sweet absolute actually is, a sweet absolute. He says, this is from his book, Love in Search for the Loved Servants, because he had the other book called Search for Sri Krishna Reality, the Beautiful. So that's mostly the perspectives we are searching for Krishna. Let's say that he felt okay, that's okay, but also we need to emphasize how he's looking for us. And actually that's the very first thing that happens. It's not that we start to look for him and only then he cares for us. So there is this book called Loving Search for the Lost, Loving Search for the Lost Servant, speaking about Bhagavan's Krishna's looking for us. So he says, the Lord's search for his lost servants. It's a loving search, right? We can stop there. Right? Because we may think, hey, he's looking for me, which is the interest, which is the agenda, why he's looking for me, why he cares for me. No? What's behind that? So let's clarify, no? Loving search for the lost servant. So the Lord's search for his lost servants is a loving search. It is not ordinary, but from the heart. And the Lord's heart is not an ordinary heart. Who can estimate what type of search he's engaged in? It is a mad search, an urgent campaign. No? He's looking for us. Although he is full in all respects, still, he feels pangs of separation from every one of us, however small we may be. Despite his supreme position, he has room for us in a corner of his loving heart. This is the nature of the infinite. Oh, it's up to you what to do with that. You believe that? Even if it's difficult to believe that it feels enticing enough as to open ourselves to the possibility that that's actually the God we worship. Someone who is engaged in a mad search after us, an urgent campaign driven by his extraordinary heart. That's the love, that's the grace that is coming to us from him. Sometimes Srila Siddharth will describe Krishna's love for us, and he will use expression impossible grace. And not impossible because it's impossible to obtain it, right? Because it wouldn't make any sense after reading what we just read. So it's impossible because it's too much. No? It's like, oh, this is impossible. It's too much, too vast. No, it doesn't obey any of the usual laws of measuring and deserving and earning we used to live our life through. It's like, in that sense, it's impossible. Too overflowing. No? Prabhupada's words, matchless gift. You cannot compare it with anything. No, that's the idea of matchless. No? It's a gift, again, to begin with. It's a gift. It's not something that I earned and I did and now it's coming, reward, punishment, transactional stuff. It's a gift, and it's a matchless one. You cannot put anything next to it. It doesn't compare with it. It's too much. It's impossible. That's why Srila Siddharth said, impossible grace. Since we quote Srila Prabhupada, let's go to Srila Prabhupada's words in this regard. He also has many things to say about this. He says, in more simple terms, but basically the same what Srila Siddharma is saying, his own words, Srila Prabhupada is saying, God loves us. Why not? He says. I'm not saying that he's saying that. Why not? We are his sons. Why he will not love us? He's kind of perplexed at why will he not love us? God loves us more than we love him. We do not love him. But he loves. God loves every living being. That's very clear. It's not God loves, oh yeah, the devotees. Those who are devotees, he loves. That's not true. I mean, he loves the devotees, but not only the devotees. That will be conditional love. The condition being, you become my devotee, I love you. As long as you're not my devotee, I don't like you. I don't care for you. But here Prabhupada is saying God loves every living being. Even when we do not love him, he loves. Why not? Prabhupada say, why not? But I'm still seeing you in your minds, the seed of doubt. You're thinking, yeah, so let's say the Maharishi, yeah, Prabhupada, but those are the more contemporary acharyas. But what about the most ancient acharyas? Maybe they say the opposite. And maybe they were right. And maybe we are unlovable. Okay, let's go to Rupa Goswami then. Just to pound the post and close the case. We cannot get further than Rupa Goswami. He's like the ones that Mahaprabhu say, okay, my mission is in your hands. You're the architect with the other Goswamis. There is a beautiful verse. I mean, and I'm just picking one statement, of course. We could stay with Srila Siddha Maharaj and be like yesterday, enter the tavern, put the lamp on, and just share one word after another of Srila Siddha Maharaj, speaking about how Krishna loves us. Then we take another night in the tavern. Okay, today's Srila Prabhupada's turn, and one statement after, and so on and so on. So I'm just picking a little bit, just few trailers, glimpses, but there's a lot of this. Just for you to know. It's not like, oh, Maharaj just was fortunate enough to find one statement and nothing else was available. Oh, there's a lot. And the book I'm writing is kind of a compilation of that whole lot and many other things. So Rupa Goswami says in Ujjvala Nilamani, sorry, 10.4, he is saying this: seeing Krishna captivated by even a little service, smiling even when intolerable offenses are made against him, and deeply distressed by even the slightest pain in another, my heart thirsts for him. It's another way of putting it. Rupa Goswami is expressing why he's longing for the divine. What kindles his flame of his heart for Krishna? He's mentioning, I'm going there. Yeah, he mentions three main things. First one, speak about Krishna, right? Krishna's generosity, Krishna's humility, Krishna's unconditional love. First one is Krishna's captivated by even a little service. Again, he's not like, you offer me a mansion, $3 billion, this, and only then you cut my attention because I'm so important. So I won't be captured if you offer me a fruit, a leaf, a drop of water. Now, that's what he says all throughout the scripture. He says a tulsi leaf, some ganga, some anything is the singular, but with heart, with intention, I'm selling myself to you if you do that. But even a little service, the little way, we spoke the other day on the day of Teresa of Lisieux, her little way, something small, he's captivated by that. He's the all captivator, the all attractive. He becomes the all attracted, even by a little service. Second part, he says, he smiles even when intolerable offenses are made against him. Famous example is Bhrigu Muni, right? Kicking Krishna's chest. Well, you cannot get more offensive than that. And Krishna is, oh, what previous auspicious activities may I have made to receive the lotus feet of this great sage of my chest? And he was really saying that. I mean, he's not like being polite and okay, I have to save the party and say something nice so the whole thing's not spoiled. He was genuinely feeling, I'm receiving a blessing, I'm receiving a favor. Oh, that's the humility of God. So he's smiling even when intolerable offenses are made against him. We could say also smiling because of deep compassion and understanding of, okay, those who are insulting me is out of ignorance. I'm not taking it personal, Krishna said. If I smile, understanding them, loving them, not smiling them like laughing at them, but from a place of deep humility and understanding and empathy and compassion. And the last one, he says, then he, Krishna, stops smiling, deeply distressed by even the slightest pain in another. Oh. Again, deep compassion, deep empathy, but connecting with others suffering in another. Here's not saying only his devotees. So God is universally compassionate and loving. And all these are expressions of his unconditional love for every living being. Captivated by little service, understanding compassionately where he is being denied, attacked, offended, and deeply suffering what someone else is suffering, taking that as his own suffering. And Rupa Goswami say, when I see all that, I thirst for that person. It's irresistible. Again, we say Krishna is all attractive irresistibly, but what makes him irresistibly attractive? Things like this. It's not just his physical beauty, so to say, also, but all these qualities that become irresistibly attractive. Rajiva Goswami says that. He says what? Sanskrit is not coming. I'm not getting any younger. Anyhow, but he says it that Bhagavan's qualities are so attractive that one is irresistibly drawn to Bhajaniya Guna Vishishta. I'm still a young boy. It just takes a little bit more time than usual. Bhajaniya Guna Vishishta. The specialty of Krishna's qualities are such that I'm drawn to offer bhajan to him, that I'm drawn to offer myself to that person because of the irresistible nature of his qualities, such as this. So we should be drawn to give our life to the divine naturally, organically, by contacting these things and naturally being so moved to the point of tears that we cannot but. It's irresistible. I cannot resist. We should reach to those points of experience and not just push ourselves and force ourselves without having any awareness of any of that. Okay, so Krishna is so humble, so compassionate, so grateful, as I was mentioned the other day in the Bhagavatam, there's a commentary, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna feels grateful in advance for all the service that we could be offering to him, but we have not offered. So he knows we could offer certain service, and he's grateful in advance for that. He's feeling something for that we are not even aware, but is there in our potential. So he's grateful in advance for our potentiality. For all that you can be and become, and you have no clue about it, but Krishna's already feeling grateful. He's reciprocating in advance. Again, it's, as Srila Samarasa says, impossible grace. It's difficult. We cannot even imagine that because we generally we don't meet people with grateful for you in advance. It's too much. No? George Harrison will say, it's all too much. Whereas, as I quoted the Mahabharata, after Draupadi is calling Krishna Govinda, Govinda. And Krishna, after that, as an afterthought, he's telling to Draupadi, you know, because he manifested himself on limited sari, she was covered, protected. So it will feel like, okay, Krishna did his part, right? So he can be content. Okay, I did my part, didn't fail, protected my devotees. Nobody can tell me anything. But Krishna continues. And he reflects and tells Draupadi, that cry of yours, no? He tells her after, that cry of yours when you call me, that cry of yours has created in my heart a depth that continues to increase. That's how he feels. And it's not only to Draupadi, it's for every sincere call from your heart to him. It's not like he's like, okay, you're asking for that, there it goes, box checked. No, he feels like, oh, that call was so honest, so sincere, that I find myself in debt eternally. It's the debt is increasing in my heart. Again, it's unbelievable, right? So it's difficult to believe because it seems too good to be true, but that's the only description of reality that should make sense to us at one point. For that, I will refer to this poem from Kabir that I shared also yesterday. One little part, I remember that Shweta Radhika said again, read that one again. That was good. That was good. I read it again. I read it again yesterday, but I will read it now. And I told her that will be my in the book. So all things considered, Kabir says, what kind of God will he be if he did not count the blinks of your eyes? and is in absolute awe of their movements. What a God. What a God we have.
Yes.
Yes. And I like this part also because he's speaking here about God counting our blinks, like being aware of even the something that you will say that's absolutely irrelevant. Like nobody's counting my blinking, not even I. It's like who cares for that? Someone cares for that. And the one who is counting your blinkings, and let me conclude with that before we have 2 more minutes. The one who is counting each one of your blinkings, he himself is not blinking. So he can count each one of your blinkings. That's one name of Krishna appears in the Bhagavata, which is Animisha. Animisha means he who never blinks, who remains always looking at you, fully attentive. No, as we say yesterday, you are seen, you are held. And all this because you are loved. They start with you are seen. Bhagavatam gives his name to Bhagavan, Animisha, he who never blinks. That means you are seen. You are never being, you never lost sight, you are being, he never lose sight of you. And each one of your blinks is being counted by the one who never blinks. In our tradition, we have Jagannath. Jagannath is the unblinking God par excellence. Not only no eyelids, nothing that can get in the way. And big eyes, big smile, stretch arms. So I will say those three symbols are the you are seen, you are held, you are loved. Jagannath, you are seen. Stretch arms, you are held. You are loved. It's coming now. We could make a case for that, right?
I like this.
Right? So, again, we have to connect, and his name is Jagannath, which means the Lord of the universe. So that all that applies to the universe, to the whole universe, not just to me, to the devotees, to this religious sect, but it's a universal.
Into the squirrel.
Even to the squirrel, especially the squirrel. At this point, the squirrel has a special place.
Nice.
2 more minutes, and then we go to exercise. And then, so again, Jagannath, since we touch on the universal point again, you are not only you are seen, you are held, you are loved, everything is loved, everything is seen, everything is held. Love is the glue that is keeping it all together. And that's what another essential quality of unconditional love, its universality. Because if it will just be loving, unconditionally loving to this group, that's not unconditional. That's already a condition. Oh, God only loves his devotees. God only loves Christians. God only loves Jews. God only loves this side of the army who is in war, and the other army thinks God is on our side. That's very conditional. You're reducing God to your own limitations. So unconditional love cannot be selectively applied to one person. While you are still harboring hate and resentment to one another, that's absolute sheer nonsense. And you have to destroy that idea forever. True unconditional love must encompass all things, all beings, and of course, including ourselves. Sometimes we are the last in the list. We put ourselves last in the list. And there is the quote of Dorothy Day that I always quote, and she will say, I only love God as much as I love the person I love the least. And I add as a footnote there, and sometimes that's us. I only love God as much as I love the person I love the least. Sometimes happens to be me, or more than sometimes. So we have to integrate that. So that means if I extend unconditional love to you, I must extend it to me, I must extend it to God, it must go in every direction. And that's why self-love and divine love are intertwined. If I love God, I have to love myself. Because it has to be unconditional. As I'm receiving unconditional love, I have to extend unconditional love. And the unconditionality has to include me. Because if my unconditional love is to God and everyone except for me, then that's not unconditional. Still, there's one condition, which is not to me. Upon my point. So in its unconditionality, in its universality, love has to include, embrace, encompass everyone, including ourselves, which again, sometimes that's the hardest part of the love equation. And understand, genuine love, genuine bhakti must include self-love, self-acceptance. It's and genuine self-acceptance must include bhakti also. It's not a narcissistic thing. I love myself and only me, and I'm the center of the universe. No, you're going crazy. No. But not the other way around either. Oh God, oh, I love you, I love you, and I love everyone, and I hate myself. That's another variety of sheer nonsense as well. So this highlights the interconnectedness of everything, everything, the indivisibility.
Yes,
Thank
good.
God, of true love, right? True love is not broken. Again, it's unbroken. So it's indivisible. It's flowing all directions, embracing everything. Two more minutes. She will. Tapana and I will drive a little bit faster than you. No problem. And you won't have an accident and you will get the train.
This is the Dhammadhar rope. Two more.
Yeah, that's yesterday. You, I was reading my poems. One more, one more. Now it's my revenge time.
That's a cool sticky
Now, if
one.
you need to prepare to bring the luggage. Yeah, no problem, no problem. Yeah, because I say that, then you never know what can happen soon.
Oh, she got Do we have
Thanks for coming. Welcome again. Always safe travels. Yeah, universal embrace. We were mentioning how unconditioned love, God's love, and self-love are two aspects of the same thing, two currents of the same river, right? One cannot be separated from the other. And again, we have gone through our tradition showing a lot of this. There's a very beautiful section in a book called Krishna Bhajanamrita, written by Narahari Sarkar Thakur, an associate of Mahaprabhu. Long prayer, I won't read the whole thing now, but he will say, like, I pray to have love for God, I pray to have love for the devotees, I pray to have love for this, and I pray to have love for that. Long list of. And the last line say, I pray to have love for myself so I can. So I can develop proper bhakti. So it's a very interesting conclusion. That's it, how the prayer concludes. And again, sorry. I mean, it's one verse from one book called Krishna Bhajanamrita. He ends up saying, "May I have love for my atma, for my soul, for my being, so I may have expressed bhakti properly." I can share with you again later if you want, even the PDF of the book or the exact verse. As we were quoting also yesterday, Jane Saint John of the Cross, he's famous for saying, "Love what God sees in you." That's a very powerful one-liner. God, love what God sees in you. What again? You are seen. No, you're held. You're loved. Jai Jagannath. And everyone is as well. So love that. Love that be that thing that is being seen. Love that love that thing that is being held, that is being loved. You love what's being loved. Love yourself. No? Because it's not the love, God is loving one thing about you. Some aspect. Love is God is loving your whole being for who you actually are, which Krishna happens to describe as amazing. Right? Bhagavad Gita 2:29, Acharya, 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 you're amazing, amazing, amazing. Who will deny to marry that person that tells you in the street three times you're amazing? It's like nobody told me that even once in my whole life. You're three times. Oh my God. And you happen to be Krishna. Okay, there you are. So again, loving the divine including tales, loving what the divine is loving. And he happens to love us. We happen to be lovable, units of worthiness, units of lovability. We cannot deny that. If we will deny that, that will be going against Krishna's own words. That will be false humility. That will be to be a rebel without a cause. Makes no sense. Right? So Rupa Goswami says Krishna is the perfect object of love when he defines bhakti. And Jiva Goswami comments, on a broader definition will be that Krishna is the perfect object of love, and all the things in relation to Krishna are also part of that. And all the things related to Krishna are everything. So there you have the broader picture of what's the perfect object of love. Again, to fall in love in an absolute way with the totality of reality. Okay, let's go to exercise two now. We'll do it in the same groups we did before. Oh, well, some of you are missing now. Yeah, so we'll rearrange the groups, no problem. Okay, we'll do again two groups of two and the rest groups of three. So the idea is the following. It's like it doesn't entail personal writing in this case, but we will go straight to the group dynamics. So you will be taking turns, and I will be marking that 2 minutes each. I'll mark it with the ball, and you will be very submissively obeying me when I'm playing the ball. That's my best attempt. You still do your thing always, but anyway, still have hope against hope. So one person, the first speaker, whomever that may be, and again, remember, if you are in group of two, you can extend those periods a little bit more because you are only two. So one person will speak a quality aloud, quality in you, a wound, a shortcoming that you are struggling to accept in yourself. Whatever. I have problems. It can be specific, it can be general. I have problems accepting myself, loving myself, this particular thing. And the other two, I mean, it's just voicing it. No need to explain and to elaborate, just voicing it concisely. Again, naming, framing, taking out of secrecy, exposing it in safe space, hopefully. And when the person is saying, I have struggles with loving myself because of this, so the rest, the other two, will say one after the other, not necessarily at the same time, and still you are loved, unlovable, and lovable. Right? So affirming. Oh, I have a problem accepting myself, but I struggle because I like this. And when you say the sentence, the others will reply in turns, and still you are loved and lovable, love able. And for 2 minutes, one person will, I mean, you won't have only one thing to say. So you can say one thing, the other ones will reply. The same person will say another thing until you exhaust your list, if that happens. If not, you will have to end when I play the ball. And then after 2 minutes, that will be 2 minutes, we take the turn to the next person. 2 minutes. And then the last person. If you are in groups of two, instead of two, you take 3 minutes. Calculate a little bit. It's okay? It's clear?
Yes.
So, and you rotate until everyone has spoken and received. So I will push the recording, pause the recording one more time. We'll go to the exercise. I hope you had a healing sharing. And I'm such a person who is losing the blessing because I have to be here just keeping the count of time when you're having all these wonderful epiphanies. So I don't know. I'm also having my struggles, so you please transform me.
Still
Thank you. I need the mirroring back myself also. Thank you. So anyhow, a few thoughts I want to share with you today about this topic. Of course, this can be a whole lifetime's exploration, and it is, and it will be, that we are glad to celebrate that. But I hope we were able to show some topics in connection to what we were sharing these days, and grief and cause of that, and lack of unconditional love, and some references from our own tradition to feel ourselves reassured, like, okay, I'm connected to a lineage which is validating my exploration and my needs and all this. Not that I'm like deviant and exploring things that are like heretical and blah blah blah. Though many people will think that and will say that, but not my circus, not my monkeys, as they say in the United States, right? So that's their trip. And hopefully, yeah, hopefully the more we enter into this realization that we are fully held, fully seen, fully loved by the divine and by others who are able to represent that, and we can love ourselves, accept ourselves, recognize ourselves as loving, lovable. We can also extend that same gift to others, because that's such a thirst. There's such a thirst always in the world of the experience of unconditional love. So hopefully we can become more and more units of unconditionality, at least in some degree. Again, there are so many levels of that, but units of relief, walking unconditional loves, right? And these are signs in nature all over, speaking about that. Since tomorrow we'll move to explore nature and the material world, and how the material world is a guru and is an unconditional giver of so many sorts, I'd like to conclude today's sharing with another poem by Hafiz, in this case, related to unconditional love, the power of becoming a unit of that, and related to nature, and how much we, if we pay close attention, enough close attention, like Mahaprabhu did when looking at the grass, when looking at the tree, we can also gain further support and impetus and reassurance in embracing the call of unconditional love. So this is a poem that we didn't read last night in the tavern. But I've read it in another moment, in other days. Maybe you know it. It's one of the most well-known poems by Hafiz, again, rendered by Daniel Ladinsky. It's called "The Sun Never Says."
Same.
Says, that saying. "The Sun Never Says." All the titles are always some part of the poem, actually. And again, try to reflect about it. I may repeat it once or twice. And then, though it's a cloudy day, still, even we can see the clouds and everything because of the sun, even if we don't see the sun. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, "You owe me." Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole world.
You set one of your books.
No, not yet. Not yet. One more time. But again, this is in the context of the sun shedding light, loving unconditionally to the earth without expecting anything in return. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, "You owe me." Look what happens with a love like that. It likes the whole world. Just try to imagine you becoming a sun unto yourself, and giving without expecting in return, that starts to light the whole world for other person, whole heart, whole existence. Hafiz ki jai. Beautiful. And before we put an end to the sharing, put it to rest, today we won't have Lectio Divina. We have another type of homework that I invite you to do at any moment during the day. You may do it right after this, or any moment during the day is for yourself. You don't have to bring it to me, to anyone. And we did that, this exercise, when we had a lecture a few weeks ago when I was in Ireland, when we had this symposium with Mahatma Prabhu, Dhani, and Sukabaha. And in my part of the sharing, there was an exercise, which was writing a love letter to yourself.
No.
So we'll do it. Instead of Lectio Divina, we'll do it. So during the day, whenever you find some quiet space, quiet time, write a letter to yourself. And not only a letter, again, a love letter. Not narcissistic, again, but in the context of what we discussed so far, in the context of self-love, in divine love. Ideally, do this by hand. No, now don't take the computer or the cell phone. You don't write a love letter to someone's cell phone. Do it by hand. Because writing is paper also allows us to slow down, not to enter into a more organic, natural pace, and helps us to connect more with what we feel. So a few guiding points that I will share if you would like. I don't want to tell you how to write the letter. Of course, feel free to do so. But if it helps, some perimeter, if it helps only, you may like to begin with how to write a love letter to myself, or you can begin with Krishna's gaze upon you. Again, how you are being loved, how you're being seen, how you're being held. So your love for yourself is not separate from divine love. So imagine how Krishna sees you. Fully loved, how you are fully loved, fully accepted, fully cherished by the most important person. So you must be, there must be something important about you as well. And try to write with affection, right? It's a love letter, right? Just in case. Why are you laughing, Jagannath? Did I say anything too strange? Right? Try speak to. That's why I'm making this exercise. Of course, I'm not telling you go and eat. And I'm not saying go and eat the brownie. That's easy. But
It's not easy.
eat the brownie as a form of self-love.
There's nothing better, so it's not easy.
We will be easier later when someone will inspire to make another trail of brownies. So write with affection. Speak to yourself kindly. As if you were writing to someone that you deeply love, as if you were writing to your best friend.
Adorable.
Adorable. No? Treat yourself like your best friend.
So otherwise we have to pretend.
Of course. And try if it's necessary. Again, these are ideas, right? Include forgiveness if it's required. No?
Go right down.
We laugh not to cry, no? But the saying goes. Include forgiveness, include encouragement. And it can be as long as you need it to be, right? Offer yourself compassion, understanding, and the freedom to be who you are, of course. In order to change what needs to be changed, but first allow to accept yourself fully as you are. Compassion, acceptance, forgiveness. And if you feel like it, and again, it doesn't need to be this way, I'm just throwing prompts if it helps you. You can close with a blessing. And the letter with some wish, with some prayer for yourself as a way of, as a further expression of love. Again, some ideas. It can go in any other direction that you feel it needs to go, but that will be the homework for some moment during the day, writing a love letter to yourself. Yogamaya.
Are we going to a Wells?
And we are going there in a minute. Okay. Let me finish this. Yeah, I'm going 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. Brother Priya?
I'm just I want to I think I mean I'm I think everybody here is so sincere, and we all stumble and fall and hurt ourselves and each other on the way, which we grieve for, but the sincerity with which everyone brings that honesty is truly absolutely lovable. Just is.
And you want to share that with us?
Just wanted to say that.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for mirroring back.
I'm proud
We
of you.
hear you.
You're
And it's always reciprocal. We
sincere.
hear you, we see you, we hold you, we love you. And it's thank you. Thank you so much to all of you. We're putting this sharing to rest now. If there are questions today in the evening, we're having Q&A, Q&E, inviting also our weekly brothers and sisters online. So we'll do it at 7 this time because we are going to the church. In a minute, we'll go there, but it will be at 7 because that's the usual time we connect online, right? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sadhu Sangha ki jai, Gaur
Go.
Premanand. Tomorrow we'll have our last full day of the retreat. We'll be exploring in the morning tomorrow again the depths of material energy. Go to Haribu.